So
good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Christy Hughes on behalf of Ms. Washington. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, and I'll keep my eye on the clock.
All right, thank you.
The government used Agent Landau's testimony to present a profile of a female sex trafficker and then argued that Ms. Washington was guilty because her behavior and characteristics lined up with the law enforcement profile that Agent Landau had outlined. And
hold on a second. The first part of your statement, I understand based on my reading, but did they really argue that because the testimony of the expert corresponded with the conduct that she was guilty? Did they make that argument?
Well, two responses, Your Honor. Number one, I don't think they had to. I think under Louis that when that's the implication,
that's not my question. My question is, did they do that? You said they did do that, and I wasn't aware of that.
Okay, well, that's my second response is, yes, they did. So during closing, they were explicit about it. So at 6 ER 1277, they were trying to show that there was an agreement for the conspiracy, and they go through the evidence and then say, well, this is consistent with what Special Agent Carrie Landau testified to. She testified that when there is a male sex trafficker and a female sex trafficker working together, one's named Daddy, one's named Queen, and they have a victim. That's the behavior, that's the profile evidence of a female sex trafficker, and they're arguing that she's guilty because Ms. Washington's behavior matched up with what Agent Landau had testified to.
Well, that's
then
the
again
part,
at 6 ER.
That was the part of my question that I was interested in. Did they say she was guilty because of that?
They didn't use the specific phrase "she's guilty because," but I mean that was their implication. These are the elements of the offense. Here's the evidence came in. It's consistent with what Agent Landau testified to. I mean, I don't know what else they were arguing if it wasn't that she was guilty.
I guess she matched up with Agent. It seems to me that this is a classic case that needs expert testimony, a lot like some of the gang cases in prison where you have to have someone explain exactly how these cultures work, and there are certain rules that go along with it. And that because jurors don't, you know, the average juror doesn't understand what goes on in sex trafficking. And so understanding what they mean by this and how, what are the rules of, you know, how does it go? And strangely, and not so strangely, the trial lawyer representing Ms. Washington did not object to this in front of the trial court, because I think it is very typically the kind of explanation that would come in. So you have to overcome plain error, right?
We do, Your Honor.
So why don't you give me your best argument that despite other evidence against Ms. Washington, the outcome would have been different had the trial court cabined the use of the special agent. And what do you have that shows that it's plain error?
I will. So I'll address the substantial rights problem first, and then I do want to get back to Your Honor's first point about whether it was necessary or whether it was proper to get in this type of testimony in the first place, whether this was like the complex case that we get in this type of profile testimony in the first place, whether it's like a drug conspiracy case. But first, in terms of the substantial rights prong of plain error and why it affected it. So as I went through in the briefs, SE had substantial credibility problems. She had lied all over the place before trial. The government was forced to admit that during its opening statement. You know, she had lied about where she had met Jimmy, where she had met Miss Washington. Up until the week before trial, she had told one story about where she had met Miss Washington. And then whenever it turned out that her stepsister was gonna contradict that, she changed her story.
And the
about
jury
where
knew
met.
All of that, right? They knew all of that.
Pardon?
They knew all of that.
Correct. And Miss Washington had credibility problems as well. And so I think the impact of Agent Landau's testimony was the jury thought, we don't really know who to believe, which one of these parties to believe. We're going to go with this expert. She is an 18-year veteran of the FBI. She has worked 135 of these cases, and she has told us, this is what a female sex trafficker looks like. This is how they behave. Here are all of the criteria that I, as a law enforcement expert, look for.
But
here
isn't
it
that...
is. She's...
I saw somewhere that she had not reviewed the facts of this case. Is that in the record or somewhere?
She says that in her testimony that she had not reviewed these facts, which is common when there's profile testimony admitted.
Do you have any evidence to the contrary?
No, but I don't think that's dispositive. All she did was testify about this is what I, as a law enforcement officer, think is the profile of a female sex trafficker. You know, they recruited a fast food restaurant. They have a legitimate job with flexible hours. They're named Queen. They work with someone named Daddy. So she lays all this out at the very beginning of the government's case and gives a sort of checklist. And then as the evidence comes in, the jury's thinking, oh, Miss Washington's nickname is Queen? Check. Her ex-husband's name is Daddy? Check. She met Essie at Jack in the Box? Check. And they're going down the checklist. And instead of the jury thinking, does the government's evidence match the elements of the offense beyond a reasonable doubt? The jury's thinking, the evidence matches Agent Landau's law enforcement profile of a female sex trafficker.
Well, and that's, but there's not cross-examination, okay? And you can cross-examine someone and say, is Daddy what they're frequently called? Is Queen what they're frequently called? Any of those? They're not. And if that's the case, or if they say, well, no, not always. Sometimes they have some other name or something like that. You've got an opportunity to cross-examine on that. But it's almost like there's a business model for sex trafficking, which the average juror would not be aware of. And so they had that testimony to consider for whatever it's worth, to understand.
I think that goes to my second point that I wanted to make, is whether it was plain error in the first place to allow this type of MO testimony to be admissible in the first place. The government has argued it is. But what this court said in Wells and Louis is this type of MO testimony is proper. It's a close question, the court said, but it's proper in these complex conspiracy cases. This was not a complex case for the jury to understand.
But isn't it common to have this kind of testimony in these kinds of cases? I mean, Brooks and Brown and Taylor and I think Williams, furthermore, the reasons given for it being allowed is to establish the background, how the business is run, what the business model is, and credibility. And you seem to be arguing that it shouldn't be allowed for to assess credibility. And that seems inconsistent with the cases I've read.
Well, what Brown and Taylor say is that the pimp-prostitute relationship is not within the common knowledge of the jury. And so it may be permissible to have an expert testify about that relationship to shed some light, as Your Honor is saying, on the credibility of the victim. And so perhaps it was permissible for Agent Landau to testify that prostitutes, you know, may lie to protect their trafficker, or they may stay with a pimp even though they're being abused. Perhaps that was permissible, but that Agent Landau did not constrain her testimony to that. She went beyond that and talked again about the common behaviors of a female sex trafficker. And that testimony about the common nickname and recruiting a second prostitute to work with the first, all of those things had nothing to do with the relationship between a pimp and a prostitute that the jury needed to understand to comprehend the credibility issues of SE.
Would you agree, going back to Judge Callahan's question earlier, would you agree that the facts necessary to for the jury to return a guilty verdict were provided by other witnesses, especially SE?
I have read her testimony several times, and I really can't make heads or tails of it. She doesn't remember. She just consistently says on the stand, I don't remember, I don't recall, I don't remember, I don't recall.
What about the other evidence? So when we're doing the plain error analysis, it's not just a credibility battle between SE and the defendant. There's also cell site data and agents testifying as to the movements of the defendant's cell phone and Daddy's cell phone and SE's cell phone, which all corroborated SE's testimony. So it seems that would suggest this isn't just a plain credibility battle. There was actual other evidence that supported the government's case. So how do we find plain error there?
Well, because I think Ms. Washington had, an explanation for why she was in the places that that cell site location data, you know, placed her in. She gave an explanation for, you know, she was trying to reconcile with Jimmy, all of these. There were a few places where her testimony didn't match up, and that's why I think the jury probably threw out both of Ms. Washington's and Essie's testimony and went with what Agent Landau had told them as the expert. But most of Ms. Washington's testimony tracked.
So what was the jury? What was the jury instructed as to how to look at Landau's testimony? What was the instruction that the jury was given?
I don't have the expert.
Because you're saying, well, they probably just threw it out and looked at it. I know that there's some there's an instruction as to expert witnesses, and it's not. If you find that their conclusions are not supported, then you're free to disregard the entirety or part of it. And
well,
it wasn't offered, and there's no, did any, was it, it was it, where can you point to me where they were instructed that that was how they were to look at that?
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm saying they threw out Essie and Miss Washington's testimony because they both had, they were both problematic. Not that they threw out Agent Landau.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know that. We know how they were instructed. We know that there was a credibility issue. And I would say if there's something I could conclude from it, they didn't believe your client.
And I can see
that obviously if they had believed your client, regardless of what the expert said, if they had believed her, the instructions they were given, they couldn't convict her.
And I mean, I think that to convict her, they also had to believe SE unless they went completely with Agent Landau, because the government thinks that the government claims that it was all about the cell site data and all of that. But SE was the one who tied all of that together and provided this coherent story. So, I mean, she was central to their case.
All right. Would you concede? You can't make a sufficiency of the evidence claim here. You haven't.
No.
Okay.
I concede that, Your Honor. I wanted to get to the trivializing the burden of proof, so I know I only have 3 minutes. So if I could quickly just get to that, unless Your Honors have more questions about this issue.
No, go ahead.
Okay. In the closing argument, the government trivialized the burden of proof when they told the jury that its obligation was to ask the same questions that Ms. Washington had asked and then reached the same conclusion. That this court in Velasquez said that the jury has a major and meticulous undertaking to determine guilt, and that's a solemn task. They have to reach a state of near certitude about guilt. And the government equated that task that the jury has to undertake with Ms. Washington's sort of gut reaction when she was confronted with the evidence that Jimmy was in hotels with young girls, and she just sort of thought, something doesn't seem right here. He must be pimping them. And the government equated those two decisions, those two reasoning processes, and came and told the jury, you need to reach the same conclusion. You have the obligation to ask the same questions, and that evidence was enough for Ms. Washington, and it should be enough for you. And equating those two was similar to what the government did in Velasquez, and that trivialized the burden of proof.
But in Velasquez, didn't the government provide an incorrect definition of the burden of proof, of beyond a reasonable doubt, several times throughout the closing argument? So it was an explicit statement of how the jurors should define and apply the burden of proof, as opposed to the argument you're describing here, where the government did not define the burden of proof, and it was defined elsewhere multiple times throughout the arguments and by the court.
Well, it did, but in additionally, in Velasquez, that was one moment, I think as Your Honor noted, one minute in a 35-minute closing argument, and the prosecutor also correctly defined and even had a slide up of the correct definition of beyond a reasonable doubt. But it was, that was the explicit argument, was this is another way to define beyond a reasonable doubt. That was the erroneous argument in Velasquez. But here, I think they were analogizing the two. It was at the very end, and it was sort of, it was akin to the government's argument that they commonly make of, you don't check your common sense at the door. This is sort of the human argument at the end. Put aside these legal arguments that everyone has made, and let's just kind of think about this as people. Miss Washington had that thought process, and she thought Jimmy was pimping. You should make the same one here. That was enough for her. These two simple questions, it should be enough for you. Go with your gut, make the same decision here. And that is not the major meticulous undertaking that they were supposed to undertake here. I'll reserve my 13 seconds.
Okay, I'll give you 2 minutes for a rebuttal. Let me make sure that my colleagues don't have any questions right here. Okay, we don't. So I'll give you 2 minutes for a rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, good morning. We're ready for the government. So if you would please state your name and your appearance for the record.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court, Robert Ellman for the United States. Regarding Agent Landau's testimony, the defendant has not offered a single case in which a court has disapproved of this type of testimony under circumstances of this nature. There are a myriad of cases that expressly approve of this type of expert testimony in sex trafficking cases for the reasons it was offered here, to explain the relationships between pimps and prostitutes, the jargon that they use, the modus operandi. And several of those cases that approve it actually involve Agent Landau testifying in much the same manner that she did here. I believe the Taylor case is dispositive on that point, Your Honor, and Taylor follows the Louis case by about 10 years. So clearly this is admissible under 702, not only in this court, but in other circuits. And we offered Williams, which is the Seventh Circuit case, because it expressly points out that this is not some type of inadmissible character evidence. And I want to be
Is this the type of thing that is, I realize you're citing precedent for the fact. Is there a need to publish in this area about what exactly is admissible in these sex trafficking cases? I think your counsel on the other side here, your friend on the other side, basically said that this isn't very complicated. So it's not like the gang cases, it's not like the conspiracy cases. It's not very complicated, that we don't need an expert to tell a jury what goes on in this underworld of sex trafficking.
Well, I believe the court already has published, and that case is Taylor, and it says that even now, the typical juror does not understand the modus operandi of sex trafficking, and so it's admissible for that purpose. And that's really what the published cases in other circuits say as well. But the Ninth Circuit's already in line. There's no split of authority, and there's no authority I'm aware of that would limit this type of testimony to complex cases. It's simply a matter under Rule 702 of whether this type of testimony assists the juror in assessing the veracity of witnesses. So I believe that the task has already been completed.
Why does it assist the jurors here? Because Agent Landau's testimony seemed to be about pretty straightforward and simple matters. It wasn't about some sort of complex transactions or conspiracies. She talked about using nicknames and taking the victim to a location where they didn't have support, taking them to another location so that they'd be more vulnerable. None of those seem like concepts that are more difficult for a juror to understand.
Well, I'm not suggesting that they're difficult concepts, Your Honor, but they are within someone's specialized knowledge, which Agent Landau has. Perhaps the best example of that is the fact that Jimmy Washington and the defendant directed this 15-year-old girl to refer to them as daddy and queen. Those terms have specialized meaning within the context of sex trafficking. The defendant says even now that these are simply innocuous or innocent nicknames. That's at page 10 of the reply brief. That's not the case in sex trafficking, and the jury would have no way of knowing that but for Agent Landau's explanation. And to be very clear, Agent Landau did not attempt to interpret any of these acts for the jury. And she knew nothing about the case. She knew nothing about the defendant. She certainly did not attempt to testify that some aspect of her character predisposed her to sex trafficking.
So how do you distinguish Lou? I would think that this case is not particularly similar to Wells, which involved the murder and actual testimony that was more akin to character evidence, and then suggesting that the defendant had these characteristics and so must have committed the murders. But Lou was drug trafficking and involved what I view as sort of similar testimony, using hard-bottomed suitcases, et cetera, the means of trafficking the drugs. And how is this case distinguishable from Lou?
I think it's distinguishable in at least three ways, Your Honor. First, Lou doesn't, just to be clear, Lou doesn't preclude drug courier profile testimony under Rule 702. It's not categorically prohibited. And that brings me to the second point, that the type of evidence precluded under Louis and similar cases is a drug courier profile that includes facts that are so general that they sweep in a large number of innocent people. And because of that, the testimony has little or no probative value. That's what the Louis court stated on page 848. And they gave two examples, one of which you've alluded to, Your Honor. The idea that people who carry hard-sided luggage are part of a drug courier profile. And another one is people visiting the United States come here and they say that they're here to either visit relatives or conduct business. Those were suspicious parts of a profile under the drug courier profile testimony that is now prohibited. The testimony here, and I'll go back to my example, instructing the victims to call Jimmy Washington Daddy and to call Demetria Washington Queen have highly specialized meaning in the world of sex trafficking. Those are not random or innocent or innocuous nicknames. Okay, those are, and neither is the name Secret or Blessing, which were assigned by Jimmy Washington, the defendant, the two victims in this case. So they're distinguishable in that regard.
So how's the jury? How was the jury instructed as that? You know, counsel for Ms. Washington basically said that her client and Essie had credibility issues. So what the jury must have done is just throw out their testimony and believe Agent Landau. How was the jury instructed in terms of looking at expert testimony?
Your Honor, I confess that I haven't looked at that instruction in preparation for today. I'm happy to supplement with a reference to the specific instruction if you like. I know that they're in the excerpts of record, but I agree with your comment earlier that it is mere speculation that the jury decided to throw out the testimony of S.E. and Demetria Washington because both had credibility problems. This is not a she said scenario. Demetria Washington's testimony, as the trial judge observed, was deliberately deceitful. The court said it was a willful intent to deceive and mislead the jury into believing that she was an innocent bystander in all of this. It's implausible. There is a great deal of smoking gun evidence that we didn't even mention in the answering brief. For example, the defendant said that she was never in Lubbock, Texas, that she was diverted and drove from Dallas to Hobbs. But her cell phone is in Lubbock, in the same place that Jimmy Washington's cell phone was located, for 45 to 90 minutes. She also says that she was only in Odessa long enough to confront the defendant, but her cell phone was at the motel that Jimmy Washington was at for 2 hours, including the time period when the two victims were being photographed. So there's corroboration for SE's version of events. There's no corroboration for the defendant's version of events, and they are inherently implausible.
Well, aren't there also photos of the alleged victims on the defendant's cell phone, but she claims that that Daddy or Jimmy put them up there, but they're on her cell phone. Is that correct?
I think that's correct, Your Honor, and the explanation is that when she was in Hobbs, New Mexico, that she rented a motel room, and after she rented the room, Jimmy Washington showed up with the victim. She purports to have been angered by that and to have slept in her car while leaving her phone in the motel room. And that's her explanation for why that happened. There's no such explanation for Odessa. But
are these sexually explicit photos of Secret and Blessing on her phone?
There is one piece of testimony that indicates that, and there's a reference to it in the pre-sentence investigation report. But I don't know if the testimony states that expressly. And the problem we had in an evidentiary sense is that both the defendant and Jimmy Washington disposed of their phones days after this, so they couldn't be examined by forensics.
Okay, so what particular facts as to Ms. Washington justify the imposition of a lifetime of supervised release? She's doing a lot of years, right? Essentially, is she doing, what, 75 years or
something? She's doing 18 years, Your Honor,
18.
Which was a downward departure from the 30-year sentence in the guidelines, so it's quite a bit less. There are, let's see, it looks like I have seven reasons outlined here, and again, there was no objection to supervised lifetime supervised release below. And again, this is an instance where the defendant has not identified a single case where lifetime supervised release for a sex offense was held to be substantively unreasonable by a reviewing court.
So neither you or Ms. Hughes were trial counsel, is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So for prosecuting, this would have been an AUSA, and defending Ms. Hughes, Ms. Washington was a public defender, or who was?
I believe it was a CJA counsel. There were two defendants originally. Jimmy Washington pled, but it was tried by two AUSAs.
All right, but who? And then Ms. Washington had a criminal?
She had a CJA lawyer, Your Honor.
A CJA?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this stuff that we're arguing about here was not objected to at the trial level?
That's correct.
Okay.
So what about the closing argument and the defendant's argument that the government's argument diluted the burden of proof by suggesting something different or less than finding beyond a reasonable doubt? How do you respond to that?
Well, first, no prosecutor said it should be enough for you that Demesia Washington believed that Jimmy Washington was pimping based on the same sorts of evidence. Again, this is not a comment that drew an objection at the time or prompted the court to intervene. But what the defendant's arguing is wrong. The government did not conflate the defendant's informal thought process with the reasonable doubt standard. In the argument, the prosecutor told the jury that if you look at the evidence, and that's a quote, you will reach the same conclusion that Demesia Washington reached about Jimmy Washington. And that's fair commentary. There's nothing improper about that argument.
You know, as I recall, the prosecutor repeatedly referred to the beyond reasonable doubt standard.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I assume the court correctly gave that instruction.
That is correct, Your Honor. And I would also add the prosecutor walked through every element of every offense in great detail with the jury, but they were instructed thoroughly and correctly on reasonable doubt.
I have one more question. You said that there are no cases finding fault with the lifetime supervised release in this category of cases.
Yes, sir.
But isn't this one different in that the judge stated that he didn't believe that she would recommit?
I don't think it's different, Your Honor, and there was a catalog of reasons why lifetime supervised release was appropriate, and it was briefed thoroughly, and the prosecutor also articulated additional factors at sentencing. So the record's pretty fulsome on this. Okay. And again, I can recite them, but they're in the briefing.
So what about there's discussion about that the defendant was a mother, and that was supposed to be an emotional to try to pull on the heartstrings or something. I'm not really sure. I note that Miss Washington admitted herself that she was a mother. So I'm not really, that argument isn't totally clear to me. So,
well, I'm not suggesting it's totally clear to me, but I think if you have the context for it, it makes more sense. The defendant had intended to introduce a photograph of her daughter at trial, and the government objected on the ground that that was being offered to raise the emotional appeal of the defendant to the jury. The court agreed, and the photograph didn't come in. But after the government put on overwhelming evidence of Ms. Washington's guilt, during direct examination, her attorney asked her why she was traveling from Dallas to Odessa, to the motel where Jimmy Washington was. And in response to that, she blurted out, and I quote, "So July, my daughter, she went to college." So she threw the cat out of the bag, and the government had no ability to object to that. She then went back about half a dozen times and reintroduced the fact that she had a daughter and that her daughter was in college. So in its closing argument, in order to right the scale, which is the term the Supreme Court uses in the Young case, which is at page 46 of our brief, the prosecutor responded, I think, to challenge the defendant's unfair appeal to sympathy, and that in that context, it's appropriate because it was the defendant who opened the door to that in the first place. I don't think a prosecutor has to stand silently when that happens.
All right. Let me find out if my colleagues have any additional questions. We do not, so that you're slightly over. So, since I'm giving the counsel for appellant additional time, it'll end up about even as a mother can be to her two children here. So that's the so we'll go back for a rebuttal. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I looked at Taylor while government counsel was talking, and Taylor specifically let in the expert testimony to explain why a person in the victim's position might not have testified truthfully in previous proceedings about her relationship with her pimp. So it wasn't about the expert testimony about the behaviors and characteristics of a sex trafficker. It was specifically to explain why the victim might have a certain type of relationship with her pimp and why that might have influenced her testimony on a particular, on the previous occasion. That's not the same thing that occurred here with Agent Landau. What occurred here was similar to Louis. In Louis, it was more than what government counsel said. It was that drug couriers also use pagers. They also create itineraries of multiple stops. They use the excuse of visiting relatives or conducting business in the U.S. They use false bottom suitcases. They use hard-sided suitcases. So these are all typical behaviors, not personality characteristics, but typical behaviors of a drug courier. And I know that this testimony has not come up before in sex trafficking cases, but in Wells, the court does look at other jurisdictions and say that in pedophile cases, they call it, which I think would apply here, this testimony has been prohibited for the same reasons that we're arguing here. Under 403, it should be kept out, it's not relevant, and all those reasons hold up. And so it's not just that it should be prohibited in drug courier cases, it's just that that's what has most commonly come up. I forgot my third point. I looked up Your Honor's question about the expert jury instruction, and it's at 7 ER 1370. In case Your Honor wants to take a look at it, Judge Callahan, it does say you may accept or reject it, give it as much weight as you think it deserves, considering the witness's education and experience. So, unless Your Honors have any other further questions, I'll submit.
We don't appear to. Thank you both for your helpful argument in this matter. This case will stand submitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.